Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following episode was recorded in front of a live streaming audience on Saturday, October 5th, 2024.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or else media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode 68, The Coal Mine Heiress. Hello and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Ed. And 1,000 miles over there to my left is another host, Mr. Stephen Orr.
Sup? I'm trying to be cool.
Well, then shouldn't you like do one of these kind of things?
I can't because I'm wearing headphones.
Yeah, okay. or kick it way to the side, you know, like this kind of thing. Or yeah, all of that stuff annoys me.
You know, I like to... It's just because I live in a town called Lecompton, so I often like to say, straight out of Lecompton, crazy fanboy named Steve.
I got gotcha.
Roll around town in my button-up short sleeve. See that?
Yeah, just off the top of your head. Not bad.
No, that's not off the top of my head. I wrote that a long time
ago. I was going to say, you have that down here on the...
Yeah, I got cue cards.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Let's see. Banter. What can we banter about?
It's gotten very warm in Kansas. We had, and I'm assuming it's because of the hurricane, but we had some, it last week it dropped down to the mid 60s during the day and down to the low 50s, upper 40s at night. It's been really nice. We shut the air conditioner off and opened the windows. And
yes,
then just over the last couple of days, it shot back up to like the mid 80s. Lower 90s, and we haven't turned the air conditioner back on just simply because I don't know.
You know you'll have to turn it back off. I mean, it's coming much, much sooner rather than later at this point in the year.
And it's still fairly cool in the evenings at night. So that's really the main time that I can't sleep if it's in any way warm. There's nothing better than sleeping in a room that's super cold, and then I get to put great big blankets around. Yes, that's like the best
have
thing
to
ever.
Use the blankets. That's when the sleeping temperature is correct, when you have to use a blanket.
And I use a fan because I need that sound because of my tinnitus. Okay. But you know, sometimes I'll especially after if you get a new fan or clean the fan, because you know, you got to clean them fans. They get dusty and they lose their power. But I clean that fan and I have it shooting right in my face and it's cold and I got my blankets and I'm just I can just see my own face sleeping there with just this big smile on my face. Just that's all I need. That's all I need in life. You've been stressing about money all day, but damn it, I am in a good mood now.
Yep. Cool air, blanket, bed.
That's right.
Yes.
Here's to good times. Tonight is kind of special. See, I took it back to.
Yeah, I still don't know where that's from. So,
yeah, it's I don't know if it's Miller time. I don't. Yeah. Never. I've never been a fan of the taste of alcohol, especially beer.
No.
So
never acquired the taste myself either.
And I would have people, in my 20s who would say, well, you just got to get used to it. It's like, I don't want to have to get used to it. If I don't like it from the beginning, why would I put myself through it just so I can get used to it? That's how you become an alcoholic, right?
It's never going to not be nasty. Right. It just doesn't bother me as much.
Yeah.
No, thanks. That's not.
It's like you just got to push through. Yeah. You just got to push through because eventually you'll be drunk and you won't care.
You won't care. You won't care.
And I did go through about a year of that where I, you know, my drinking year where I would drink simply to get drunk and learned that I was a bit too handsy. And so I stopped.
That kind of thing is one of the check mark things that you have to learn for yourself when you get to be a certain age, going to a certain age. You know, there are just a handful of those things. It's like, well, you'll figure it out. And drinking and whether or not you can or can't, or what, that's at the very top of the list, I think, because we have been told forever that we can't or shouldn't. So now there's nobody to tell us. So what are we going to do? What we have been told we shouldn't.
I think I was in my mid-20s at that point, though. So I held out for a long time. Because,
peer pressure.
But the funny thing was, is that it was peer pressure that ended up doing me in. You know, I held on for years because, you know, it all starts in high school.
Yep.
Especially when you're going to parties. And, you know, right after high school, I'm playing in a band and we're always at bars and clubs. And so it's always around.
Right.
And I've always just been like, nah, tastes like crap. That's all what it came down to. But then there was one particular night at a bar after we played. And one of the guys that was hanging out with us bought all of us Jägermeister shots.
Okay.
And he's like, here you go. And I'm like, no, I don't drink. And he says, don't drink, don't smoke. What do you do?
You don't drink. You don't
smoke. I was like, fine.
Yeah. Ooh, Jägermeister.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Black licorice. And I've always hated black licorice. So I don't understand.
So it was a double whammy there for you.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, guys. Today we're going to be looking at
You don't have any banter? I feel like I just hoarded all the banter.
No, I haven't done anything lately to banter about. I'll have to work on that.
Okay. All right.
I'm a year out of practice of bantering.
Right. We have to get back into the practice of taking notes now throughout our week.
Exactly. Yeah.
Here's something to talk about when it comes to the banter.
Yeah. In between recordings, I'll have to pay more attention. And that's what it is.
Yep.
Alrighty, folks, today we're going to be looking at The Coal Mine Heiress, which is the Superman story that appeared in Action Comics number 34, written for us by Jerry Siegel and arted for us by Jack Burnley. Now, Action Comics 34 has a cover date of March 1941, an approximate sale date of January 23rd, 1941, and those dates are from Mike's Amazing World of Comics. So, here's what happened. Heiress Doris Lorry has inherited her father's valuable coal mine. Clark Kent visits the mine to get the story, but is sent away by Lorry's uncle, Jim. Investigating further as Superman, he saves Doris from death inside the mine. Frightened by the experience, Doris meets with her uncle, who tries to poison her, but is stopped by the Man of Steel. Jim Lorry then tries to kill both of them, but Superman's powers overcome the crook. After apprehending Jim and his partner, the mine manager Crawford, Superman saves the mine from a bomb planted by the crooks. Sorry, guys. Something just felt weird there.
Yeah, that was a weird sentence.
Partner, the mine manager Crawford, after... Yeah. Anyways, yeah, okay.
It should say, after apprehending Jim and his partner... Oh, the mine manager Crawford, I guess, would be Jim's partner.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, okay. I do want to start by saying, didn't mention this in when we talked about issue 34, but the cover has absolutely nothing to do with the Superman story inside.
No, not at all.
The previous issue, Action 34, has Superman saving an armored car from an armed robbery, and he's flying, holding the armored car up in the sky with the robbers shooting up with pistols at him. This one, Superman is... he's not flying down. He's dropping down because he can't fly, dropping down onto some crooks who are shooting at him, and they are about to blow up a dam, the dam in the background. And one of the crooks has the requisite early 40s plunger to trigger dynamite. And actually, the two bad guys that are facing out that we can see both have those Lone Ranger eye masks on.
Yep. Yep.
You can only assume that the third guy does too, but his back is to us, so we can't see. So they are the mask trio bad guy. I don't know what they're called, but that scene has Nothing. It has nothing to do with the story because, as the synopsis said, this story revolves around a coal mine inside and outside. I'm not sure how you can really connect that to a dam in on a river.
No, but it's good to know that comic books have kind of come full circle, because a lot of the covers these days don't have a lot to do with what's going on inside. You know, a lot of them are sometimes you have covers that are just done up by somebody and sit in a drawer until they need to be put on a cover.
Right.
You know, Wolverine sitting on a motorcycle and nowhere within the issue does a motorcycle appear, you know. So it's good to know that that stretches back to the Golden Age.
Now, there is, I think, in my mind, there is a difference in the way they do it. Today, that cover is done as a piece of art.
Yes.
It's somebody that has been given free rein to do whatever. And even if the actual A cover for the book applies, any variant cover that they pay for will have nothing to do. So, I mean, the vast majority of covers for any one comic book have nothing to do with the story. But I don't, the Golden Age, the reason that the image was on the cover was to attract you to that book on the newsstand to, at the very least, pick it up and look through it, hopefully be interested enough in it to buy it. So it was definitely a marketing ploy.
Yes.
Today's, the way they do covers are also a marketing ploy, but they don't care, seemingly to me, that you pick up that book to read it. That's not what they're trying to do. They're just trying to get you to buy that book.
Yep.
They don't care whether you ever open it up, which is proven by the fact that most people will buy that awesome looking cover, stick it behind a piece of plastic, and stick it on their wall. Yep. They don't read that shit or stuff. Excuse me. They don't read
that shit.
The whole concept of the way things are done like that now today really it bugs me, makes me angry. Yep. So it's kind of, they're doing the same thing. They're trying to catch your eye, trying to get you to buy the book. Between what I think they were doing early on and what they do now, that's where it changes. Early on, they wanted you to get it and then read it. That's why they wanted you to get it, was to read it. Nowadays, they don't care whether you read it. They just want you to get it,
exactly,
get the money and move on, whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, a lot of people will argue, well, yeah, it's the same thing. Well, to a point, it's the same thing, but I believe the motivation, the final goal may be the same, but the motivation to get to that goal is entirely different today than it would have been then, because obviously the cover had nothing to do. Probably this cover has been done who knows how many months beforehand. They just pulled it and they're like, okay, we'll use this one, and stuck it on the book when they sent it off to be printed, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, and it makes me wonder because, you know, Action Comics was an anthology title. Granted, Superman was the reason people were picking it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wonder if at some point somebody within the publishing company was like, you know, this cover has nothing to do with the Superman story. And somebody pointed out, well, it has nothing to do with any of the stories. So there. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, I can't tell flipping quickly through the Superman story pages here. I don't know if this was the first story of the book of this issue of Action or not. It probably was.
Probably.
Do know by the pagination that it was the first story in the previous issue of Action. So I can only assume at this point, with what I also will assume is the popularity of Superman, he probably had the primo slot in Action moving forward, particularly now since he has his own book also.
Yep.
So yeah, he's
yeah,
he's
and the
right,
the fact that if you look at what the first 13 or so issues of Action Comics, many of them did not feature Superman at all.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like every issue is a Superman cover and will remain that way for the life of the book.
Yeah. Moving forward now, that's it. He is the picture child for the book. We know ultimately the book will shrink in number of pages. Superman will always be in there. And this is becoming, if it hasn't really by the beginning of 1941 already become, It's becoming a Superman book. Even though he has his own title, he's popular enough apparently to carry both at this time. And of course, now we know he's popular enough to carry 28 books or, you know, DC wants to do. So
the two things that I will say about this story right off the bat.
Okay.
One, it is the coal mine heiress, not coal miner's daughter. So this is not about Loretta Lynn.
No, no.
Two, story didn't really do anything for me.
Oh, but it was, I thought it felt very similar to the first.
It did. And again, for folks who maybe, if you're just tuning in for the first time, pull the curtain back. Ed and I record at least two episodes at a time. So in this chunk, we recorded the previous episode. So we always end up at some point, especially during the second episode, comparing the two books. Mm-hmm. The previous book, Action Comics 33, I think, you know, what I said last time was that one was fairly boring when I started it. But then if it wasn't for some of the characters and then the bad guy with the mask and all that, that's what turned it around for me. And then, of course, the way that it ended was just crazy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe as we talk about this one, I may change my mind, but I read it. You know, it's funny. I'll say this real quick, because last Saturday, we got together to record. We were going to talk about Action Comics 33 and 34. And you were having technological issues, so we didn't record. And it wasn't until after we were like, we can't do this. We'll do it next week, that I realized I had started this story before that Saturday. I didn't finish it last week. I got it read through last night. And I just, the previous issue I read last week, this story I read last night. There is a lot about the previous issue that stands out for me. Nothing in this story stood out for me. But again, my brain doesn't work the way it's supposed to. So maybe as you talk about it,
okay,
stuff will go, oh, yeah, that was crazy. You know,
I thought it still has a very reading the story, the artwork aside, I think by the way it's written, you can certainly place it in a particular time if you have read enough comics. If you've read a breadth of books, it has a golden agey feel to the characters, to the way they're portrayed, to what's going on. Now, if you go so far also to introduce the art, well, the artwork certainly places it in an older time than what artwork nowadays typically will look like.
And the art's great. I love Jack Burnley. I love his art on these books.
Yeah. Our splash page does tie into the story, but not really the way the splash page is crafted. The splash page is an image of a loaded coal car by itself. Having been set loose, it's running wild, uncontrolled down tracks towards what is her name? Doris, who is collapsed on the right. She had to have made that sound when she went down. You know she did. On the tracks, the coal car seemingly is going to crush her. Superman falling in again because he's not flying yet. So he is falling. With the Superman fist in front pose towards the car to save Doris. Now, all of that more or less occurs in the story, but not the way this is drawn. So the concept is the same, but the specifics for the actual story when it occurs in the story are quite different, actually, if you really want to get down and look at the two side by side. So the story starts out, Clark gets an assignment from the daily, what are they calling it now? Or just the planet, I'm sorry.
I think it's the planet at this point.
Yeah, it's just the planet at this point. Clark is getting the latest story, daughter of the late wealthy coal magnate, and now under the guardianship of her uncle, has just come of age and inherited the rich Lorry coal mines. So the young heiress, but not a lumber mill heiress, because we saw her last issue. This is the coal mine heiress. And there's also a difference. I will say in the lumber mill, the person inheriting was not as anyway.
Well, it was supposed to be a boys' home.
Yeah, yeah. So, so Clark is directed to look into the heiress / coal mine. This whole new situation.
I do like here on the second page. Mm-hmm. Once Clark gets the assignment, it just immediately goes to Clark and Lois Lane drive out to the Lori Mines. It's just a given at this point. They used to try to explain why Lois and Clark would go out on a story together, because she's supposed to be, you know, she's not an investigative reporter. She does like the gossip stuff, the people who go to clubs and restaurants,
more womeny articles about the media, about pop culture. I would presume lifestyle pieces, yeah,
exactly.
Pieces, maybe fashion, those kind of things that it was assumed that women would want to read. That's what Lois writes.
So
Clark does the hard hitting, go out there and maybe be in danger, kind of get the real story kind of stuff.
Right. So there used to be a time when the guy would tell Clark, I got a story for you to go on. And hey, why don't you take Lois with you? Because, you know, this is dealing with a woman who is an heiress. Maybe she can get the lifestyle aspect. You know, what does this woman cook for dinner every night? You know, they would have made a point to justify why Lois is going with them. And now it's just a given that Lois is going to go with them on a case. So on the one hand, it's like they're not even trying at this point. But on the other hand, I feel like, well, we're establishing the fact that Lois is slowly becoming less she only does articles about women stuff.
Right.
To Lois is starting to become an investigative reporter. They just haven't said it out loud.
Well, hopefully what long term they're doing is setting them up to be more a team to produce this article rather than a you and a sidekick. Or and, we need a lady's touch, so it'll be you and a quasi. Let's see what. Oh, I almost had it. What do they call people who they call in to help them edit a book that has knowledge of the?
Not a ghostwriter.
They have knowledge of the type of people they're writing about, whether it's a culture or a. What do they call that?
I don't know. I want to say pundit, but I don't think
It's kind of a newer trend. If you have a straight person that is writing a novel about gay characters, or about characters that are, say, like Native American, or they have somebody to come in and read it.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know the.
But that's kind of initially what you thought Lois was. She was to put that woman's touch on whatever Clark was turning in.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now, back to the Superman Super Show.
Now, at the same time, I know that they have also made it a point that regardless of why Lois is being sent with Clark, she seems to want to try to get the actual story. I feel like they have made it a point to show that regardless of how the editor, the chief may think of Lois on the at the newspaper, she is making strides to be taken more seriously and to get the real stories.
And,
maybe that's maybe that's kind of the point of this. They don't need to explain to us why Lois is going out with them this time, because it's just a given that she's going to help him get the real story. And it's either going to be under her name or his name, because it seems to kind of go back and forth.
Right. Yeah. So, as you said, we just jump into the next portion of the story where the two of them, Lois and Clark, are heading off to the coal mine. They are met by the gatekeeper, as it were, you know, the person that is part of or is embedded and who sees them as the outsiders. And they're like, oh, what are you doing here? What do you want? And so they have to give their, in essence, their bona fides to the gatekeeper in order to pass through, to be able to get through. And actually, I was going to throw in a reference to the Ghostbusters first movie, but it didn't come out. It didn't come out right as far as the gatekeeper
and the keymaster.
So, so after this little interaction, they managed to convince the gatekeeper. He doesn't get a name. He's just a tough. I just have him written down as a tough because there's another one there later on.
He's not the partner. No. No.
Yeah, no. It's her and Uncle Manager Crawford. He comes a little bit later. And then Uncle Lori, we're about to be introduced to him, and we're about to be introduced to Doris here also.
So I do like that they pose as students.
Yeah, but still, that's kind of dicey. She could be a student, maybe, but he certainly doesn't look the part.
Yeah.
Again, in his suit and his vest, which this one looks like just a straight-up vest, button-up collar, tie, bowler, or not a bowler, fedora, which I do dig. Kent's choice in hats.
Yes. He looks about as much as a student as he did a lumberjack in the previous issue.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe. Now, I do know that this kind of attire was dressing up a little bit farther back. So it could be that the men in college would have dressed like this on special days, but I don't think on a day-to-day basis in like the teens and 20s, they necessarily would have dressed like this. In the 30s, 40s, 50s, I certainly don't think they were dressing like this in college, the college men. So
they'd have a sweater on.
With the big letter on it, or the emblem of the college, and a blonde cheerleader on the other arm. They would. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So next up, we go underground, which is an interesting place to first meet the Lorries. But Jim, Uncle Jim Lori, is showing his niece around, a personal tour of the mine, which is just kind of odd. The two of them are walking around in street clothes, and, you know, she's wearing a dress and he's got his nice suit on in there. A pretty blonde girl emerges from a nearby mine entrance, accompanied by a tall, elderly, hard-faced man. That's what the narrator tells us. We see that they're emerging from shaft number 3. It's drawn, you know, like coal mines, with support timbers and everything like that. So it just struck me as kind of weird that they just were. Okay. My experience here in southern West Virginia, the mines are, the seams of coal are not large. The seams of coal are very short. If you get a 3-foot seam of coal, you're doing good. That's why a lot of times in commercials for the types of mines we have here in West Virginia, they're riding in a car that is like 2 feet tall, slunk back so that they can travel in the car as the car takes them in and out of the coal mine, because there's only 3 foot of clearance.
Yeah.
The car has to be shorter than that. And then the men have to fit in the car to be able to ride it. When they're working, all kinds of stories of men working, slinging hammers and picks and whatnot on their knees. That's all the room that they had, you know. So this is more like a Western, some other type of ore mine, whether it be iron ore or perhaps copper ore. I'm not necessarily as familiar with those, but something where the miners can go in and are able to stand up, obviously, like these guys are going. So whatever the seam of coal is that they're working, they need to work the heck out of it, because it is huge to be able to do this. Now, none of that really has anything to do with the story. That's just...
No, but
me as you know, my experience with coal mines here where I live.
But even beyond that, despite the fact that they're obviously important people in that mine, you think they'd still each just throw on a pair of coveralls before they go out into this dirty coal mine?
Well, you would think at the very least, because they are not going to come out clean like this. There's no way. So Clark sees him coming out, and he's running. He's going to try to get the story, completely oblivious to the fact that they just said, you know, there are a couple students and they're doing this student thing. All of a sudden, Clark kicks into reporter dude and runs up to Doris to try to get a story from her. Lois is trying to tell him, you know, no, Clark, you're going to blow our cover. What are you doing? Clark just runs up anyways and starts to question her like a reporter. The uncle, of course, gets mainly really put off. The girl is kind of put off by it, too. Uncle calls for the heavy that Lois and Clark just passed. I mean, he is right there, too. Yeah. Clark doing all this after lying to this dude, essentially, because now the tough dude can see what Clark wants.
He does say they're from the Daily Planet.
So. Right. Yeah, Clark does.
Yeah.
So Uncle calls the tough throws Clark out. Once again, we have seen this multiple times. The two of them show up. Something happens to Clark that if he is going to Superman, he's going to have to Superman from away from wherever Lois is, whether she has gotten captured or her cover has still solid or she is off doing something else, whatever it may be. But
how did she maintain her cover? They don't explain that at all. It's like, well, if you're a reporter, I'm sure she's still a student, so she's good, but you're going out.
Yeah, she can still stay. You know, we just now know what you're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. So now Clark / Superman is outside the mining compound, and Lois is inside. As far as we know, Lois is still the student doing, you know, she's still, they still believe that she is doing what she initially said. Clark now is on the outside forced. Either he's going to have to sneak in to do something, or he's going to have to come in as Superman and hide from everybody if that's what he does, which, case in point, that's what he does.
Yep.
He changes into Superman, leaves his clothes just laying out here outside somewhere. I guess he'll go back and get them if he needs them. Still can't fly, so he jumps over the fence around the mine, which we do see does have some barbed wire up at the top, so...
Yeah.
Somebody actually spent the time to be kind of realistic about the fence when they drew it, Burnley or whoever inked or whoever colored, or it's hard to say this far, this long ago, how exactly.
It looks like the narration points it out too. He leaps easily over the high barbed fence.
It did, didn't it? Okay. So now Superman comes, lights atop a really nice looking building here. I'm kind of surprised. I didn't necessarily realize that the coal mine was this quality. It's a multi-story bricked tiled kind of really nice building. I was thinking more that this would be a situation where the mine things were more built to do their job rather than built to potentially look good, which is how this building is, whatever building this might be. Inside the building, probably, or maybe still outside. I don't know. We can't really tell. Uncle Jim Laurie is talking to a different tough guy. This might be Manager Crawford. I think might turn out to be Manager Crawford, but he's Laurie is setting something up to take care of his niece. Superman realizes that that's going on right after all this excitement. They just were touring the mine. So the uncle, and we're assuming that this is all happening as we're seeing it back to back as far as time frame.
Yeah.
But the uncle wants the niece to get back into the, there's something that I forgot to show you or that I still need to show you or what have you. He makes his excuses to get them to walk back into the coal mine they just exited, still as before, dressed in just regular street clothes. So the narrator tells us the pair descend the narrow shaft way deep into the newly deserted mine. Okay, they're walking a set of tracks. I don't know that I would call that a shaft way. I would assume a shaft way is the kind of thing that you use on a ladder to get down. You know, that would be a shaft to me. Yeah. But this, it's huge. They're walking a train track that is big enough, you would imagine, for a coal car. To me, it looks like a coal car you'd see on a freaking train, not one of these little coal cars that you always see in cartoons or Indiana Jones, if that's where you want to go. But the shaft, the shaft way or whatever you want to call it, they're going through is probably two or three times bigger than the railway for the cars. So again, man, if you find a coal seam that is this big, you need to jump on it because there is just money waiting to happen. Jim makes his excuses, tells the daughter, the niece, you know, go on up here. I want to show you something up here. I'll be there in a minute. I got to step over here and do something. And he steps over here and he flips a switch that he has told who I presume is Manager Crawford a little earlier. Narrator tells us, leaving Doris below, Jim Laurie hurries up the shaft, pausing for a moment. He presses a mysterious switch attached to a beam on the wall. So he's some switch over here. He's flipped it, pressed it, whatever. It's the signal to whatever he had his man Crawford doing at the upper levels or outside of the mine. Laurie runs away, not to meet his niece, but he runs away saying out loud, no one will ever suspect. So right there, you know that whatever the switch was he flipped, it's not a cool thing that he's trying to do.
Yeah. And I would have to assume when they call it a mysterious switch, it's mysterious to us as the reader. We don't know what the switch does. I would assume that anybody that works in this coal mine knows what the switch does. Otherwise, a worker would be like, what's up with this switch on the wall? It's very mysterious.
You know? That's the situation that you would always see in the cartoons where somebody just leans up against it, not knowing what it does and triggers it. Right. You know, so, yeah, hopefully they know what everything is on the walls in the mine, particularly since they work there. So she's niece Doris, or I'll just call her Doris because I can't remember niece all the time. Doris, we see that the image that's drawn. Kind of, I thought the narration and her image and what she says, all three of the things for some reason didn't mesh to me. It was almost like they were all done by different people and then just pasted and added on. All the narrator says is, meanwhile, back at the mine shaft. Okay, that's pretty neutral. She is standing here. This mine shaft is hella lit too. You can see her shadow in the back behind her. So it got some bright. My experience in coal mines, it's never that brightly lit. As a matter of fact, the men usually carried the light source with them.
Yeah.
It wasn't this, I'm filming a TV show, I've got camera lights kind of, which is what it looks like. But okay. What can that strange noise be? It seems to be getting louder. Okay, so that must have something to do with the switch that Uncle threw. Next panel, higher up in the tunnel, a runaway coal car roars around the bend faster. Faster it goes down the incline, loaded coal car, and it's the one that you always see. I remember it from the Indiana Jones movie, where they're going through the whatever copper mine, whatever kind of mine that was, with the you can kind of there's two appendage two things that you will see in the cart. One of them, usually in the back, is a clamp that is attached to a brake. Or a lever that's attached to a brake. Usually in front, you see what you presume is a steering wheel, and that's kind of what it does with strict limitations. It steers not like a car, but it does, if not turn the wheels a little bit, it will bank the car to give you some control on the rails as the car is moving forward. Now, once the car reaches a certain speed, the movement really doesn't do anything to it anymore. It's either tied to the track or it's going to come off the track because it's going too fast. So this one certainly looks like ain't no amount of steering going to do anything to it because it's got some massive speed lines coming off.
Yeah,
of it.
It's going fast.
Yeah, it's been going for a while. It's fully loaded going downhill. So something's going to happen to the girl. It's getting louder and louder. She finally yells for help. Superman, who is in the vicinity, falls to the front of the cave and is going to go in to see what she is yelling about. He doesn't, The only thing he really could hear is her crying for help. He hasn't heard any other noises to assume that something is happening. So he's going towards her voice. He's stopped by a couple more toughs. One of them is kind of wearing a suit, so maybe he's a little bit higher up in the coal mine tough hierarchy here. The dude not in the suit has a pick, a mining pick. So they're going to stop Superman from going in. The dude in the suit, again, I'm presuming is the manager Crawford that Uncle Lori talked to at the very beginning, who set all of this that we're seeing in motion with the coal car and everything like that. Superman zips past him. Another panel of the coal car rushing on. Puts me in mind of a country song from back in the 80s about an out-of-control coal train, something. Yeah.
I love the panel, though, where he zips between the two of them, because it's just motion lines. They're both falling backwards, like something right. really fast just came through. And then you just have the word whiz.
Right. In case the motion line. Everything else isn't cluing you in on what's going on. They put whiz in the speed lines there for where Superman was. So, yeah, all of it. The lines, the two guys being forced apart because something goes between them. And then the word whiz.
I think
not stretched out, just the four letters whiz.
Yeah, I think that's actually what it means, is that one of those guys is now peeing because it scared him so much.
Probably. Well, yeah, no doubt. Something suddenly throws whiz. Him apart like that. Yeah. So Superman is zipping down and underground. And again, there is some massive lighting. I don't know what they are using to light this mine, but there are shadows everywhere and big, distinct shadows.
Yep.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages. And now back to the Superman Super Show.
The niece, I said I wasn't going to use that, Doris, I got to remember her name, Doris. She's starting to shrink away even more because the sound that she's hearing is getting louder. Now she says, the car, it's coming closer, help. So it's not just noise to her. She has realized what it is she's hearing. So Superman is going towards her. Presumably, he is going to get to her in time to stop the car. But on the next panel, we see that, no, really, Superman is trailing the car. And he stops the car from behind just in the nick of time. I thought it would be more heroic if he was in front of the car
right.
and kind of took the impact somehow to save her. Yeah, but no, he does the clutching of the car and the, you can almost see his feet and the steam burning where he's being the brakes for the car. And it's a dead end tunnel. She's at the far end as far as she can go. And the car stops right before her.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah,
if he was between her and the car, then that would mean that she is on the other side. So her running from the car would take her to the entrance, but she's running deeper into the mine to where she comes to a dead end.
But if he puts himself between the car and her, it would show how fast he can truly be.
That's true. He could have jumped right over
the car to her.
Yep. Yep. That would have been cooler. Him standing there with his hands on his hips and the car just smashing into him.
Yeah, he was outside.
Yep.
And before it was triggered, we still saw him outside. We know she's going to be hit by the car. And then, all of a sudden in one panel, you see panel of car, panel of Superman. You do that a couple times. And then panel, you see her Superman car. And it's like, oh, he is so fast. He beat the car. Yep. Yeah, so lost opportunity. That's okay. So now, the savey little couple, three panels here. But as he's talking to her, the next thing that happens, because, again, that's the way these stories go. You stop one nefarious plot, but there's got to be something following it up. This time, it was something we had no indication of. Completely caught him and probably her by surprise as well. Narrator tells us, but as they turn to leave the shaft, and we don't know, I guess they have been down here long enough that the two men that he whizzed past got word, backup plan was formulated, backup plan was put in place, and then executed. Because we don't see, he stops the car and then they talk. We really don't know how long they're talking. We don't know how long it took him to catch up to the car. So all of that could have been enough time to put this second plan into place when the bad guys saw that the first plan wasn't going to work. As they turn to leave the shaft, there's a terrific explosion in the tunnel ahead. Rocks and wooden staves hurtle towards them. Now, apparently, this is a different kind of wood that we have recently seen, because I don't think this wood could have deflected bullets. This wood acts like wood that's caught in an explosion, and it just flings everywhere. It breaks and bends. There's a cave-in in the mine, all like you would expect. I say that because Stephen and I have recently seen where wood was able to deflect a bullet from very near the barrel of the gun from which the bullet discharged. And it just bounced off.
Bulletproof wood.
Yeah. Like Superman would be if you shot him. Very same kind of reaction. And maybe it was Kryptonian wood. Yeah, no, it couldn't have been.
Also, look at the first panel on this page. If it wasn't for the text, you'd have to assume that maybe something was about to happen. It's like he's going, hey, baby. Yeah,
it looks like he's going in for one there. Yeah.
I can almost hear in the background, let's get it on.
Yeah, some 70s. Yeah. But yeah, it's written much more. You change the colors on him. And this is a panel much more akin to a romance comic.
Yep.
Which I know I don't think we're really out too much yet. But, this is almost the way Kirby would have drawn something in a romance comic.
Yeah.
In the 50s. Superman just bulls his way through the cave-in to get him out. Now, my understanding of a cave-in is it's typically not just that stuff, but it's like stuff from way up that has fallen and has. So the pile, if you take out that immediate pile, there's stuff above it that is waiting to fall. And, you keep doing that and keep doing that. Apparently not. This is just a cave-in where it was just the immediate stuff. Just fell into the tunnel. Yeah. And so all Superman had to do is bust through it, and they were able to get out.
Yep.
So first he breaks through it, and then he picks up Doris and runs her out, leaps her out. Again, I say that because he is not flying. Superman cannot fly. Looks all the world like he is flying carrying Doris, but that is not what's happening.
Nope.
Sets her down. She says, as she is bidding him adieu, she says, up, up, but there's no away there. So they almost threw in another up, up, and away, but no.
But again, the whole, is he flying, is he not flying? Technically, he doesn't fly until issue 10 of Superman. But not only is she saying up, up, she goes, there he goes, up, up, into the sky, faster than an airplane, which airplanes fly.
Yeah. They don't just catapult into. Yeah. So the bad guy is surprised to see that the victim survived. We get that between Doris and her uncle here. He's he's taken aback that she made it out of the runaway coal car and the explosive dynamite, whatever they used to blow up and collapse the mine shaft.
He covers himself very well, though, right? He's like, Doris, I'm so glad you're safe.
I heard there was a cave-in, and I bet you heard. Okay.
Yeah.
So here she tells him, Superman. And he's like, Superman, still people that don't believe that Superman exists. He's a myth. What is that?
In the real world, we've had 2 full years of Superman books being published, 1939 and 1940. Mm-hmm. It started in 38. But we've had at least 2 full years of Superman books being published. I don't know what that means as far as the time frame within this universe. But yeah, for people to still, Superman, that's a myth.
Yeah. And there has to have been pictures published by now.
You'd think.
So, yeah, I guess picture is not proof enough. Although, it's all the proof we need. How many times have you heard a picture it didn't happen as far as social media?
Right.
That's all we need is a picture, but
yeah, hell, we've seen live video footage. Nah, that didn't happen.
No, it's not. Okay. So she, She doesn't, I don't think, really add anything here. Just tells him, yeah, we narrowly escaped. He saved me. Jumped into the sky with the speed of a bullet. Next cut to Superman. He goes back to wherever he left his clothes and dresses himself. Then as Clark Kent, as Superman, as Clark Kent, he goes to investigate the cave-in and finds the remains of a time bomb.
Time bomb.
That was the cause of the cave-in. So in order for it to be a time bomb, they had to have known beforehand when they wanted it to go off. So I guess that was part of the overall plot. Maybe they were going to cover up the fact that she was killed by a car by having planted a bomb to go off soon after the car.
Yeah, that's all I can think of is that, yeah, the coal car was going to smash her to death, but then the explosion would bury all of it so that it would be a while before they even found out she was dead.
Right, yeah. So we continue following Clark. He goes on into the mine. This, yeah, I guess he's in the mine where he sees the time bomb remnants here. He goes...
Does the name time bomb, for some reason, that sounds weird to me. I know that there are such a thing, that there, you know, timed explosive devices.
Right.
But to hear it as a time bomb makes me feel like it's a bomb that has something to do with the flow of time, right?
Potentially, particularly when you're talking with comic books. I mean, yeah, that's the problem. We're jaded now. Time bomb means something completely different.
And I know it's not the first time I've encountered the word time bomb. Obviously, it's been used over and over and over again in my life. But for some reason, suddenly it just seems weird.
Yeah, it kind of, when I read that, it jumped out as kind of a, you know, I don't know. I don't know necessarily what else you would have called it.
No.
It was rigged to explode or something, you know, but yeah, time bomb, just like, Investigating on, Clark finds the button that Jim, the uncle, pushed to set all of this into motion. Clark says out to us, he's telling us, and this switch, I'll wager it has something to do with the mystery of the runaway coal car.
How does he know that?
I don't know. How is it? Yeah. Why is it not related to the time bomb? Maybe somebody pushed the thing and I don't know why it's the car.
Why does it have to be related in any way? It's not labeled
to anything. No.
Yeah. He sees a switch and goes, I bet this had something. It could be a light switch, Clark.
Reporter's intuition, I guess.
I guess.
So now Clark runs out of the mine and he's caught by
the guard.
The original tough, because here he shows up in an office with Manager Crawford. But the first tough that he and Lois bluffed past at the beginning of the story,
the gatekeeper,
catches him as he's coming out of the mine.
Yeah, the gatekeeper.
Yes.
And he says, hey, snooping around again, eh?
Yep, already thrown him out once. He got back in, so I'm just going to – well, I'm not going to throw you out this time. This time I'm going to take you to the manager's office, which I don't know. Why wouldn't he just grab him and throw him out again? He did it once. Just, you know. So he takes him to Crawford. Kent confronts him with a little bit of the information that he thinks he has from what's gone on and a little bit of investigating that he's done. Crawford realizes that he's too close. Kent is actually onto something. So he tells the tough to throw him out, and he roughs him up this time on the way to throwing him out. Now the tough beats up Clark, which we know isn't going to hurt him, but we don't see anything as far as him throwing Clark off the premises again. What we see instead is Clark, once he's off premises, changing into Superman. And then Superman hopping back onto the premises. So they kind of clipped all of that stuff out as really it's not necessary. We know Clark and Superman are the same. So, you know,
that the panel where he's punching Clark, though, is rather funny because he says, and get out, stay out, and punches him. And Clark says, ouch. But then he says to himself, I must act as if his blow really hurt me.
Right. Yeah. Which,
but the fact that he says, ouch.
So the punch, he's not playing like the punch knocked him out at all, because
right.
He, and of course, the punch is delivered with a bam.
Yeah, and because they don't show a lot of what's happening after that, and it happens so fast, what I'm imagining is that they're standing at the gate. The guy punches Clark in the chin. Clark says, ouch. He falls back. As he's falling back, the guy turns around. He starts to walk off. Clark hits the ground, rolls, jumps back up into a Superman costume, and then leaps over the fence. I'm just picturing this all happening within a matter of 30 to 40 seconds.
Well, you may not be far off, because Superman jumps over the fence to confront this same dude. So
yeah, he's still there.
Yeah, either he has gone and come back and they confront, or like you said, this all happened in a very, very short time frame and the tough is still there, which that is the way it seems to draw. Something happened. He did something with Clark, but then immediately Clark changes to Superman and confronts him before he gets very far away.
The narration says that he does so out of view. Out of view, Clark removes his civilian clothes once again.
Well, but he could do it fast enough that you're not going to be able to tell what he's doing anyways.
Yeah, but because he's talking at the same time, those fellows are up to no good. Doris Lorre's life may be in danger at this very moment. So he's taking his time. He's not in any big hurry.
No.
He sounds like he's expressing feelings that he needs to get in there fast, but he doesn't seem to be. He seems to be taking his time.
And let's take a moment and consider that we have completely lost track of Lois.
Right. Yeah. Does she? I don't think she shows up until the very end.
Right. Well, we can say she must not be in danger. Okay. Right. I think we can say that. But beyond that, we don't know if she's found anything. If she's she could just be sitting from when they first threw Clark out, just sitting there and have never moved.
Yeah, Lois at this point really has two purposes for these stories. She's either there to tell Clark that he's a coward and that all his decisions are wrong.
Right.
Or she's there to get in trouble so that Superman can save her.
Be rescued. Right. Yeah. The early 40s version of being fridged. Not quite as extreme as it will get to be. But, you know, the damsel in distress, the reason why the hero is the hero.
Exactly. Yep.
So Superman hangs the tough on the barbed wire that we have seen. I guess that's why they've spent all this time in the story being sure to illustrate the barbed wire, because they were going to use it. So, he hangs him with the stereotypical, zipped up jacket and everything. Oh, help me. I can get down now.
He tosses the guy up there. He's just it's like he's shooting a basket in basketball. He just kind of lobs the guy up onto the fence and he hangs there.
Yep. Jumping to the main building now, or I guess running. Superman's running to the main building. The uncle is confronting Doris. All this time, what the uncle has been trying to do is to kill Doris so that he can get control of the mine. The mine is in her name. Well, actually, he has willed it to her, but he's still here, which is kind of weird. If he wanted it, why did he will it to her? Why didn't he just keep it? But anyways, at the beginning of the story, it said that he had willed it to her. And that's so the presumption, do what?
That's weird.
The presumption is, to me, they're showing this as if he is showing her around before he turns it over to her. Then he's going to go do whatever uncle things and leave her in charge. But what is happening behind the scene is that he has willed it to her. He's taking this time. Go ahead.
Well, I looked at the first page and it's actually the chief tells Clark that Doris Lorre, daughter of the late wealthy coal magnate, and now under the guardianship of her uncle, she's come to age. So apparently her father died a while back.
Okay.
Which she was not old enough to get. So her uncle has been basically running things as her guardian. And now she's at the age where it's all going to come to her. And her uncle's like, nope.
Yep.
Again,
the picture.
We have a second story here. Issue 33 is all about a rich guy dying and his brother wanting to control what the guy left behind. And we got the same thing here. That's weird.
Right. Yeah. This is in a way a little bit more nefarious because it's his own flesh and blood that he's trying to, not just trying to do anything, but he's trying to kill her.
Yeah.
So that's what's been going on, to kill her to claim the mine, ownership of the mine. So here he is trying to calm her, trying to help her out of all the recent tribulations she's gone through. He's offering her a drink to settle her nerves. Superman jumps in the window, having used his X-ray vision to see that the drink is poisoned. So he exclaims as he's rushing in to save, "Don't drink that, it's deadly poison." So now there's a confrontation between Superman and the girl, which I always like when the good guy does this. Superman gets the drink from Doris and then turns and offers it to the uncle. It's like, "Oh, well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. Okay, here, you drink it." And immediately when the person who first offered the drink refuses themselves to take the drink, you know something is up. Anytime, anywhere that happens, you know that is what they're telling you. Yep, you know.
Yep. So, go ahead.
You go ahead.
Well, first, I wanted to point out the first panel on that page, how they did a really good use of the art with the motion lines and the color to show how fast he's coming through that window when they just basically make his cape just a red streak leading out the window. That's really cool.
Right.
And I don't know if you were going to touch, because we haven't quite gotten there yet, but the ridiculousness of the what happened, what Jim says once he's found out, what, you know.
Okay, let's see. That would be, yes, this costume meddler. He fesses up.
Yeah.
This costume meddler has spoiled my plans, so I may as well confess everything. Crawford and I plan to do away with you and thus gain control of the Lorre mines. Crawford is the manager of the mine. And next panel, the now repentant Uncle Lorre says, now there's nothing for me to do but pay the penalty for my crimes. This elevator will take us to the ground. And I thought, well, they're in a building. Yeah, this makes it seem like they're in the mine somewhere. And they're, yeah. Now, even me, I see this thing that Doris and Superman are walking into, that the uncle is going to close the door. You know, he's generous. He's going to close the door behind him. This doesn't look like any elevator I have ever seen. No, it looks a bit more substantial than that, just off, just cursory looking at it, you know. Come to find out, Uncle slams the door shut, and it's not an elevator. It's, to me, it looks like a safe that he has trapped him in a safe. Doris says it's a decompression room for the miners. He can adjust the air pressure at will. Is this something that underwater?
Yeah.
But from above ground, or I mean underground mines, is this something?
They must go really deep.
I don't know. I hadn't necessarily heard. I'm not saying that it's not possible, but I'd never really heard that was an issue for mining.
Yeah, I know.
I get some kind of compression decompression imbalance. Yeah. And
I've never heard of that either.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages. And now, back to the Superman Super Show.
So, while outside, Lorre turns the control to the highest air pressure. No human being can stand this air pressure. It'll burst their lungs and I'll be rid of them both. That was the narration, what he said.
Which makes sense. I mean, if you're going to make a machine to change the air pressure to help save somebody who need, you know, may have the bends or whatnot, of course you're going to make it in such a way that you can change the air pressure to a highly dangerous level and instantly burst the lungs of anybody inside. Why not? That makes sense.
Yeah. We made it to help people, but if you use it the wrong way, it will hurt people.
That's right. Sarcasm.
Yes, much. So now he has done this. They're in there. Doris starts to succumb to the difference in air pressure, but of course, Superman's not affected. And he grabs her with one hand with no explanation this time. He grabs her with one hand and he busts through the side of the compression chamber again with that. It's not full out, but it's a cocked Superman flying fist that he has to strike with first. He uses that to bust out, ties up Uncle Lori with some piping that he just rips off the wall and ties him up. Lori tells him, as you know, well, haha, you've got me, but this isn't over yet, kind of, you know, situation. He tells him, and let's see, yeah, I guess it is true that Lori says, no one else, a giant time bomb planted in the main mine shaft is due to explode in exactly 10 seconds. So I guess that's another time bomb that he must have used, which is kind of interesting because he had no idea that Superman was going to be able to escape his previous trap. So he was planning to blow up the mine regardless. The whys are kind of escaping me. He admitted what he did. He killed the only witnesses to his confession, but yet he still is going to go ahead and blow up the mine, which is what he's been wanting to get control of this whole story.
Yeah.
And so
I don't know if maybe he just had that planted as a contingency just in case. He didn't know. I don't know, because he says that he didn't pull the switch on it until Superman came crashing through the wall. So
we didn't see that, but okay. I mean,
he says he's got a giant time bomb planted. Just as you crashed through the wall, I pulled the switch, which started the time fuse.
Right.
So if they had died in that compression chamber, would he have then, all right, I won, and then went and got that bomb and yeah, made sure
it not have done it? But why? Also, why would he expect a normal human being, which he doesn't know anything about Superman, to be able to survive, to have a backup plan to begin with?
I don't know. Yeah. Unless he just, maybe he's just one of these crazy dudes. It's like, look, I have this plan to kill my niece. And just in case, I'm going to put a big time bomb in the main shaft of the mine, just in case anything at all go. I don't know what may go wrong, but if I'm not able to kill her and the police find out, I'll trigger the time bomb and everybody will die. And
I should have
explained it more.
Well, it just seems in this particular story that there was just thing after thing after thing that was ready to go without really any lead up or anything. It's like, oh, well, that didn't do it. Try this. That didn't do it. Try this. You know, and it's like,
yeah.
Well, how did you know any of them weren't going to work to know that you needed a follow up, you know, not just once, but it's happened multiple times. It's like, okay, you must really believe in Superman, because once you were confronted with him, you didn't know what would stop him. So you had plan after plan after plan to try to stop him.
Yeah.
So Superman runs out, goes into the mine, finds the bomb. Leaps out of the mine and high up into the air. So he doesn't throw the bomb. He just jumps with it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it blows up in his hand or whatever, or he throws it once he's in the air, whatever, but the explosion really doesn't seem to affect him any. Comes back down, grabs Manager Crawford, who is trying to run away, finally, after seeing all of this stuff that doesn't work. Superman adds Crawford to the uncle's pipe wrappings. They're now wrapped up back to back, whereas it was just the uncle.
Yeah.
Doris thanks Superman. Oh, look, here is Lois.
There's Lois.
Meanwhile, Lois drives back to Metropolis. So Clark Kent got kicked out. She has not seen him. She does not know anything about anything, but she does decide, well, I'm just going to go back to Metropolis. I'm going to leave Kent or wherever, whatever he's doing. I'm just going to leave. I don't know about him. And just she. Okay. If there is one thing that I learned very, very early in life, it's that you do not leave your wingman. And that has stuck with me since I was in high school. I learned that and I have lived that ever since. Lois apparently has never learned that lesson, because she gets in her Studebaker here and drives back to Metropolis. Yeah. No idea what's going on with Clark. Just knows that he's not with her.
Yeah. Makes you wonder how long she actually stuck around, because
really, yeah,
she had no idea what's going on. Cause she's, well, I guess there's no story here. I'll drive back. Wonder what happened to Clark.
She didn't talk to Lori. She wasn't around to hear like 18 different explosions that happened in the mine. Maybe that's a story. No, And she's oblivious to everything.
Yeah.
And just drives back to Metropolis minus her wingman.
Yeah. I can only assume that right after Clark was thrown out, Lois says, oh, well, I'm not going to get an interview.
Yeah.
Gets in the car and drives away because I don't know. She doesn't even, where's Clark? Should I bring Clark back with me? I don't know where he went. Oh, well.
Should I try to get help? I don't know where anything, nothing.
Because my colleague has disappeared. Did she think that maybe he just, as soon as he got kicked out, he leaped up and ran to a cab to go back home?
Right. He went back to Metropolis. Says, yeah. I can't do anything here. I'll just go back. Yeah. So that's the next to last panel. Of course, in the last panel, they catch up their little professional competition here. Clark has submitted the story about Doris and the mine, the lorries and all that, scooping Lois, although Lois apparently didn't have any story because that's what it says in the previous panel.
Yeah.
But, you know, their little competition, he says he scooped her. And then
he says, for once, Superman helped me to get a scoop. Hasn't all of his articles that he's written have been because Superman has helped him? You know, does nobody understand that?
And doesn't that mean that he must have been around wherever Superman was in order to get the scoop? So that means he was still there somewhere?
Yeah, unless they just assume that Clark headed straight back to Metropolis. And then at some point, Superman came knocking on his door. Hey, Clark, I got this story for you if you want to use it.
Yep.
Thanks, Superman.
From what she said, Lois doesn't even know that Superman was involved, but yet Clark is dropping Superman. We know he was involved, of course. Lois doesn't. So
Lois does not come out looking very good in this story or the other story, because both 33 and 34, there's all, at least Lois was involved in issue 33, but she still had no clue that Superman was there. She guessed that Superman was there, but for a reporter, she's not really on top of things in these two issues.
She's acted kind of goofy in these two issues. So spent plenty of time on that story. Sorry, took me a while. I'm kind of out of practice.
No, but you got me enjoying it. I can look back at it now and go, yeah, there were some fairly ridiculous moments that now have made me understand how I could enjoy it.
And I don't know if it's me or it probably part of it. It's me. Part of it is how I have been trained, having read comic books for, you know, umpteen years. But I always, even without trying, I look for the gaps between panels.
Yeah.
Now, there are going to be some, and some are expected, you know, of course. But in a lot of these Golden Age stories, there are miles of gaps at times between panels.
Oh, yeah.
And that instantly jumps out at me. So then as I read, I will go back to see, well, did they give us some clue or indicate or anything, you know? So those gaps like that, particularly time gaps, just really jump out at me and they draw my attention. And so I kind of read trying to put the puzzle back together, like maybe better than it was by the time I got to the end of the story.
Yeah.
And a lot of times in these early comic books, you can't put that puzzle together any better. It just you have what you have. And so that's one of the enjoyable parts of, for me, reading Golden Age stories, is that it reads so different and it feels so different from contemporary books that I read that I enjoy it. It's a nice break. Is it a good job? Is it I don't know. What I do know is I enjoyed it.
They're fun.
You know, so that's all.
See, and for me, I kind of dwell on wanting to know some of the more mundane things.
Okay.
So we know that, for example, her father obviously died long enough ago that though she is the one who inherited the coal mine, she was young enough that she could not be put in charge.
Right.
And so her uncle Jim, her father's brother, was made her guardian. So what I want to know is, how old was she when this happened? At what point did Uncle Jim decide, I'm going to have to kill her in order to maintain control? Did he try to do anything legally? Did he you know, was this his first idea? Did he not think of, you know, is there some way I can make her look completely irresponsible and not, you know, not responsible enough to run this mine? And so they have to end up giving it to me when she comes of age. You know, he right. could have, there's all kinds of stuff he could have done before just going straight toward, I'm going to have to kill my niece.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's nothing else. I have to kill her. That's all.
And then he convinced a guy that works at the mine to help him.
Yep.
We have to assume that obviously money is involved. The other guy wanted a piece of that action, but still it, and that's, you know, and that's the thing about these golden age stories. You're not really supposed to think of that stuff. It's right, just, yeah, you're just supposed to take it for granted that this kind of stuff happens. Right. And that's, I think, what's kind of fun about a lot of these things.
They seem to write, in ways they, okay. These early comic book writing seems to have tried to write deeper than a lot of books do now without giving you the details. So it's
right.
It doesn't feel shallow. It feels like a very thought out kind of story, but a lot of the details are left out.
Yep.
Whereas currently the stories a lot of times are about as shallow as you can be with way too much detail for the fact that they don't, you don't need that detail because you didn't tell us that we would need it. But yet here's all of this. It's like, so to me, that is one of the things that I have noticed that I enjoy. It's like, no, they sat down and really thought out this story, but they only had 13 pages. Yeah, and so they just trimmed it as much as they could to get across the point. And that's it. If you ask them or you looked at their notes, a lot of that stuff is in there. They just couldn't put it in the book.
Yeah. So it makes me wonder, what if, you know, I would like to see some kind of exercise where we take this story, for example, and give it to some of the big writers of today, you mm-hmm. know, give it to Bendis, give it to Tom Taylor, give it to, you know, Josh Williams or whatever his name, and just say, okay, write your own version of this and see what happens. You know, are we going to see 4 issues going through this? Are we going
to
see 6 issues?
Yeah, you have to tell them space is not an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
However long you need to tell this story.
Here is your premise. Here's what's good. You have to have this happen.
Right.
But write it in the way that you would write a story today. And if that, you know, take as many issues as you feel you need or necessary, you know.
It's not going to be 13 pages.
No, it's going to be at least one full issue.
At least.
And there's going to and there's going to be a lot of stuff that it's just, I don't know. You're going to be like, okay, great. You know, here is a whole scene of Doris talking with her uncle. I don't know. There's going to be a lot of
talking heads. There's going to be a lot of talking heads. Yeah.
Because, you know, I can be a really big fan of somebody like a Brian Michael Bendis. There's plenty of his comics that I've read that I have loved. And at the same time, there's plenty of his comics that I will read and go, nothing happened. Somebody was talking throughout the entire issue. And then there was 3 panels of action and it reads great as a trade, but as a single issue, I would have to assume that had I bought that as a single issue, I would have went like, what in the throwing it down? This, I spent my money on this, you know, nothing happened. And then at the same time, he's got, you know, I've tried to read some of his Justice League issues and he's got, so he has this thing with dialogue that just sometimes drives me crazy, where everybody has to be talking at the same time. Everybody had, you know, if you got 6 people in a scene, everybody, 2-3 people are having a conversation, but the other 3 have to interject stuff that make no sense. But just, I love a lot of his stuff and a lot of his stuff just drives me crazy at the same time.
Yep. I understand.
But you know, and not everything you write is going to be gold. That's just.
No. And yeah.
But yeah, it would be a really interesting experiment to gather up a lot of these writers, you know, from the last 5 to 10 years and just say, here's this action comic story, write it the way you would write it.
Right. Get what would it be? I guess you would give them a script and I guess tell them to flesh it out. to whatever extent you wanted to. Start here, end there. Here's some touchstones in between.
Because some writers are going to be like, okay, I'm going to start page one. I'm going to start this story with Superman and Doris in the decompression chamber, and her lungs are about to explode. And then I'm going to take it from there to the very beginning when Doris's father first dies.
Right. It's like,
And some people could do that and make a super compelling story. And then some people could take that and go, wow, you just wasted my time for like seven pages with nothing.
Really? Yeah. Yep.
All right. I don't think I have anything else to say about this issue. You changed my mind about it. I didn't enjoy it still as much as the issue 33 from the previous episode. Right. But yeah, I got enjoyment out of it. There were really some really fun moments, and the whole Lois. Why was Lois even in the story? First of all,
I don't know. But it was not, and particularly at the time they are writing this story in the 40s, it certainly wasn't necessary. You didn't have to include a female in that.
No,
they didn't. They did, but they didn't. Yeah, it's like, why did you? Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, really, Lois didn't have to be in the previous story either, but they put her in there so that Superman could rescue somebody at some point.
Well, but at least you saw that she was there. The argument about whether or not it was necessary or whether she was used well or not, completely different discussions. She was there. She was a part of the story. You know, here, she was there. She was not a part of the story at all.
It's almost like her inclusion was just so they could say, by the way, Lois still exists, just so you're aware.
Yep. Or so that years later, you know, you could tick off Action 34 as an appearance of Lois. You know, you could add to her appearances. That's, you know. Yeah. Nothing substantive at all as far as her appearance there.
Yep.
We'll go ahead and throw out that if you are or are not following, either way, regardless, the next episode we will get into an actual Superman book. So we're moving from Action Comics to a Superman title, his title, the next episode. So, and also an even farther heads up, I believe coming up in not too long, we have a book that we have not talked about yet. It will be the edition of a brand new book.
Oh, really? I haven't looked that far ahead.
After the Superman title, I believe the next book is the first issue of a book that will go on to be a Superman vehicle, but it's not one that we've talked about yet. It'll be a brand new addition to the Golden Age books that have Superman.
I'm flipping through the pages, and because Superman number 9 is next. There's usually four stories in those, so that means that'll be the next four episodes.
Go to the index at the beginning of the book, and that allows you.
Yeah, but I'm flipping through this Superman issue, and I'm just not that impressed with the art. Oh, okay, all right, yeah. Looking forward to that.
Yep, that's something new. And as a hint, I believe that that first issue of that book is the only issue of that book titled that. I believe the next time the book appears, it's under a different title.
It does look like it's an anthology, and the people who are on the cover with Superman does not appear in his story. So that kind of sucks.
Yeah, because there's some cool people there on the cover. But yeah. So that's cool. We're starting to, you know, for a long time, it was Action only. And then we introduced his eponymously named title. So then we have the two titles. So we're starting to see his publishing universe expand as we move forward through 39 through 40, now into 41. We'll get the addition of another book that will carry on for a while, probably for the foreseeable future, actually. I think it'll be these three titles that will just bounce around through getting stories from for the next several years of publishing time and the next multiple years for our time as far as what we're doing. So, yeah.
Well, here's another little tease. Flipping through that Superman issue, it won't be the next episode, but the episode after that, Superman fights an alligator.
Mm, I believe that's a first.
And as you can imagine, fight doesn't last that long.
Shouldn't. Now, I want to see if we see like an alligator shoes and an alligator purse and those kind of things.
You see those in those cartoons where punch the alligator and the next thing you know, you got a bag and some.
Yeah, one punch and then the next frame is all the alligator gear.
That was like something you'd see in a Popeye cartoon or something.
Yep. Yeah, I doubt they'll let them do that in comic books. But yeah, the cartoons, they sure have. All right, guys. Are you good?
I'm good.
All right. Definitely want to thank you for listening. Until next week, folks, I'm Ed. That is Steven. And this was the Superman Super Show. Ciao.
Bye.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to the Superman Super Show at gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out stevenorelse.com or just use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Superman's bad. I mean, he was bad.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.